Hi, everybody. Welcome back to my podcast. This is David Leibovitz. And if you want to find me, I'm at davidleibovitz.com. I'm also at my newsletter where I update things, share stories, share podcasts. And that's at davidleibovitz.substack.com. And if all that confuses you, you can just Google my name and add the word website or newsletter to the end and you'll find me. So thank you for tuning in today. Today I have a super special guest. I probably say that about all my guests, but this is somebody who I met years ago. We sort of lead parallel lives, and people often think we might be the same person even at some point. And once we even did an apartment trade and I screwed up and we ended up sharing the night together. So we're bound for life. So this is a person that doesn't really need any introduction if you're into the food world. But I have Deb Perlman here from Smitten Kitchen.
Thank you, David, for having me on. I'm so excited we could schedule this.
Thank you. And when I first met you, I think I linked to you on my blog, when I had my blog, and I wrote Smitten Kitten. And it led to like a porn and escort service.
Smitten Kitchen is a sex-positive feminist toy shop in Minneapolis, I think, if I'm saying that correctly.
That's a front for an escort service for people into high-class food at modest prices.
I actually think they seem very cool, and I always want to stop in there when I'm in Minneapolis, and it never happens because I'm always there for like 3 hours. But they seem very cool, and I'm sure we have a big overlap in audience.
Well, somebody had a website called Filthy Paris, and it was showing like trash in Paris, and I once linked to it, and somebody wrote to me once, and they go, you might want to change that link, because it was something else.
Oh.
And I won't.
I love the internet.
Yeah.
So democratic.
I know. Well, we've both been on the internet for years. You were one of the, you were between the first and the second wave of food bloggers, and you came on the scene, you were a tech writer before, and you started a blog in 2006. And tell me about, the first blog wasn't Smitten Kitchen.
No. So I actually had a little blog in 2003 called Smitten.
A little blog.
It was smaller. I mean, it was at the time it didn't seem small. It seemed very big to me.
Okay.
But I had a site called Smitten, and it was from 2003 to 2006. And I, back in 2003, you didn't need to have a focus. You didn't need to have a social media strategy. You didn't even need to have photos. So I just used to write about, like, bad dates I was going on and, like, silly theories about New York. And I don't know. I mean, like, I think there were definitely some readers that go way back. But at the time, I was just...
Well, that was actually the time where people weren't reading blogs. They weren't, or if they were, they weren't looking at them for typos or nice pictures.
They were like, very much a journal. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a journal. It was like a diary.
But the funny thing is I was writing about bad dates I went on and pretty much within...
Is this still up? Now I wonder, like, where is
it? Actually, I didn't mean to stop. I paid the hosting for like well over a decade after. Mm-hmm. And then I forgot my login. I'm like, which is so mean. And I'm sure the credit card expired. So I'm sure it's there's nothing. I mean, there's probably some really bad writing. But the funny thing that happened was that I thought I'd write about it because you're going on so many bad dates. And I just thought there were some really funny stories here I should share. But then I actually met my husband a month later. He was reading the site. We went on a date and we got married 2 years later. So I couldn't write about dating anymore.
Okay. So I thought he met you because you changed your site, I think, in 2007.
So in 2006, I switched because I had been married for a year. And I'm like, all right, I'm not writing about dating. I'm tired of just, I got much more interested in cooking.
You didn't want your husband to know about your dating life.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't blog about my dating life. That would be very awkward. Right. So, yes, once you're married, you can't write about dating unless you're French.
It's not a crime. We were talking about that once.
I was like, on
technically, no, but.
It is not a crime, David.
We just have a text right now from him, too.
That's so funny.
He says, bonjour, David. I have two questions.
So that is so cute. I want to hear his questions. Okay. So, yeah. So then I started Smitten Kitchen. But I mean, I was like, hey, guys, I'm starting, you know, you can see me focusing on food more and more. I'm going to try to go food full time. And that was 2006. So that's the whole story. But yes, I've been blogging forever. I'm a grandmother in blogging. But I was definitely not an original food blogger. There were people who came before me that are still at it.
Mm-hmm. And Martha Stewart called your blog cute. I actually did a little research on you.
Oh, my God.
I thought that was really sort of charming. And now you're probably bigger than Martha. You probably say, oh, Martha, she's cute.
Oh, stop it. Are you kidding? Bigger than Martha? Where's my house? Where are my homes? No,
it was
not bigger
funny.
Than Martha.
Because you started writing about food, and there's a sickness in the food blog world where you go back and look at like your posts that are 20 years ago old, and you just go, what did I do?
What?
So I looked at yours. Mm-hmm. You had like stuffed cabbage and pictures. There was some like tomato thing that was really weird looking because it was little out of focus. So when you started blogging about food, why did you write about food? Why did you choose food? You went from dating to food.
Yeah. Well, I was always, there was definitely food in the original site from the beginning, and more so once I was like at home having an excuse not to go out every night and we were cooking more. So it was definitely a break. But I really, I've been very opinionated about food. I was
really?
A picky kid. I
well,
know.
That's a strong suit.
So it wasn't that I knew how to cook or I was particularly good at it. I just had a lot of opinions on food. I would make a recipe, like a very well-rated, like yellow cake recipe. And I'm like, oh, this is too dry. Okay, so I made it again. And I tried it with buttermilk instead of this. And I really liked it better. But you got to bump up the salt. And then, boom, that's how all the blog posts sound.
So
I started with this. I wasn't happy with it. And so I realized that there was, I have a very intense need for you not to make the wrong recipe. I want you to make.
You want people to be happy. You're a
people
pleaser. I
want you to don't make that recipe. Let me tell you how to adjust it. Like I get upset when people make
so
the wrong
recipe.
So
do you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert?
I think that's a really good question because I don't think I am particularly either. I think I have moments of both. I mean, I book tour, I talk to rooms.
Well, there are extroverted introverts.
I might be that.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm shy, but I never make the first conversation.
If that makes sense. Your whole body language, you just sort of recoiled a little bit in a good way. But
I don't know if people know me and it makes me more shy in a way.
Well, I was thinking about the way you write because a lot of people have said to me over the years, oh, the way you write, you sound like a friend of mine. And I'm like, okay. And the way you write is even more so because you write about your neuroses, you write about foods you hate, which is normal. A lot of food writing over the years used to be, you know, this is a glorious chocolate cake and you and your family and friends are going to love this. And you're recoiling and sticking out your tongue at me right now as I say these things. And you don't write that, but you make it sound like Lori Colvin, the food writer. She made you feel like you were following her in her footsteps. And you do that really well.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit, do you think that the way you write as an introvert is you're putting something out there that is edited, but not filtered. It is filtered, but I can't describe it.
I'm not good at making the first conversation, but once we start talking, like you and I, good luck.
Okay.
I'll never shut up. Like, I will be friends forever. I really will be friends with you forever. Like, if we're friends once. No, I'm serious.
Okay.
I'm, like, very unwavering in friendships. Like, we're friends, we're going to be friends. Like,
okay,
I don't go anywhere.
You don't have any non-friends.
Nobody the only friends. People I'm not friends with that I was one honestly, I don't know what this says. Like, we could just go over this with a therapist chair. We'll go over to the therapist sofa after this. I would say there are people who decided for some reason that the friendship wasn't good for them. But I tend to be, like, very consistent and loyal. And I don't know. I just tend to not waver. But in terms of one of the things I always loved about Lori Colvin versus, you know, you saw me cringy when you were talking about your family will love this chocolate cake. And while it's true, I think so much of food writing and old food writing was about pleasing others. And I'm like, why don't we ever talk about how you feel making the cake? Because when I make an amazing chocolate cake, I am like, oh my God, guys, this cake was the best part of my Thursday. And it was so easy. And that's like, I want to talk about how you feel. I want like how it feels to make something amazing at the end of a long day where you had to be an adult and you didn't want to be and you had to do all the stuff that you didn't want to do. And then you got to make something you were really proud of.
Well, I think about Savoir magazine a lot because I think, you know, in the old days we had these esteemed magazines like Bon Appetit, Gourmet, Food and Wine. And then Savoir came along and you had like real people voices. They would talk to like grandmothers who made pies or pitmasters or somebody who lives in Syria making flatbread or something. And then blogging started and you had voices like yours and it sort of broke this barrier where, you know, when I read Lori Colvin, I was like, she was actually a blogger because she wrote a story and then had a recipe, but the story was really interesting and compelling. And that's the same thing with your blog. So I was trying to figure out how many recipes you had on your site.
Probably close to 1,300, which is crazy.
But
because it doesn't feel like that.
So how do you decide? Because there was a whole thing, people were like trying to work the search engines and like, oh, everyone's looking for chocolate cake with graham crackers, graham cracker ice cream. How do you decide what to make?
It's a whole mix of things. Yeah. 90% of it is whims and cravings. Mm-hmm. And 10% of it might be like, it's a good fit. And I think the site needs this. But I'm kind of like moving that, you know, that number moves over a little bit because something I learned, especially writing my last book, I told you I'm kind of a picky person. Yes. And there's so many foods that I'd be like, oh, I don't want that. No, that doesn't interest me.
No peppers.
It took me.
You don't like caviar. I read
that. I don't know.
You don't like cardamom. You don't like caviar.
I do like cardamom. I come around. So, okay. Well, there's two things. There's the pickiness, which for me, so some people are like, I'm picky. I don't like this stuff. And it's like a whole personality.
I think you're discerning. I want to
be talked out of it, if that makes sense. Not by other people, okay. But I'm always like looking for ways. And now I love cardamom buns. And, you know, it's about having it the right way. Like I thought I didn't like cilantro a long time ago, and now I like it. So for me, a lot of cooking is challenging myself to like things that I don't. So all those things, I'm like, oh, chicken parm. Yeah, I would never do a recipe for that. And it was really over my last book in particular that I finally realized that everything I thought I didn't want to write a recipe for or I didn't want to cook was the perfect place to jump off with my recipe. I guess I've been doing that quietly over the years, but I started doing it more consistently where I was like, shortbread is boring. Chicken parm is too much work. Lasagna is too heavy. Like all of these things were actually like that's step one. Okay, so how do you fix it? Pot roast is boring. Like, I don't know, turkey chili isn't good. Meatloaf is average. Like all of these things have been actually really fun. And now I think I will never run out of things to cook because I've never run out of things that I don't think are as good as they should be.
So I was on a panel once with Ree Drummond from Pioneer Woman.
Love her.
She's great.
I love her.
And I said, you know, I start all these when I had my blog. Now I have a newsletter. But when I was doing recipes, I said, I have all these recipes I've started on my desktop on my computer. There's probably 12 or 15. She looked at me. She's like, what? And she was like, I do a recipe. I have an idea and I just work it through. So do you have a lot of ideas going on? And then we're going to talk about the difference between blogs and books, because that's really interesting.
I am probably in the middle of 300 recipes right now.
Okay.
And part of it is because I'll work on it a couple, like let's say, oh, the perfect gingerbread loaf cake. Okay. I'm going to work on it a few times this month. And I'm like, oh, this is it. We're ready to go. I'm going to get it out the door. But otherwise, I'm probably going to table it come January 1st or Christmas week. And save a lot of notes. And then next year when I crave it again, start working on it again, try to get it out the door. So most things that you're seeing, I've either worked on them for a couple months or up to 10 years. It's hilarious, but some of these things just take a long time. So because I'm not working in like a test kitchen where I have to like get the recipe done this week, I can just come back to it seasonally or when I'm in the mood for it again. So the next time I'm craving a spinach omelet, I have one that's almost ready. And when it's ready, bing, we'll move it out the door. It's actually almost ready. I can't wait to share it.
Because I have a couple recipes like that. And I just, at some point, I just decided, oh, now I'm not interested. Like 2 years later, I'm like, I'm not so interested in that anymore.
But if you lose interest, what was it where you just felt like there was nowhere to go with it?
I don't know. I can't think of any recipes offhand. But it's different, like when you write a book, you have to submit like a list of recipes generally with a proposal. So you're making a face. Well, famous and you sound
like No. I've definitely done that. But then I've also said, I thought this would be a good recipe, but this recipe is better for it. So I make a lot of swaps and nobody holds me to it as long as it's still a good book.
But they want to see sort of what's... So how do you decide what's a cookbook recipe versus what's a blog recipe? And how do you do both at once? Because I was never able to figure out how to do blogging and writing books at once, even though I did like 6 books while I had my blog.
It's really hard. And there isn't a simple system.
And you have a family.
And there isn't a...
You have kids.
Oh, keep reminding me.
I know.
I was trying to have fun here. I was trying to be like cool and like free. There isn't a simple system and there isn't like a single answer. I will say in general, if something is really deeply tethered to a single holiday or a time of year, I will probably put it on the site first because I want you to open my books any day of the year and not be like, well, Yule log, that doesn't help me. You know what I mean? I'm not saying I won't put any Christmas recipes in or I won't put any, I don't know, 4th of July recipes in, but in general, they're not going to be seasonless. They have plenty of vegetables in that have times of the year, but I like the idea – that, you know, on the site, I can go, this is the perfect time for Christmas cookies or a Yule log or a gingerbread cake or latkes. I don't think that like a book needs a latke in the same way unless we're kind of making it an all year thing. So that's one of the things. And sometimes in the book, it can be, there are very like basic classic recipes that make sense to have on the website. You know what I mean? Like it would be crazy for people to come to the site and not find, easily find a recipe for pickled red onions or something like that, which is funny because I realized that you couldn't and I'm going to work on that, or a classic shortbread. But in the book, I might be like, but here's this other way thing you can do with it where you can kind of dig in a little bit and talk a little more about concepts.
I always figure recipes in a book are more legacy recipes. It sounds funny, but like if I have like a really good brownie recipe, I kind of want to put it in a book. But then I have like a gluten-free brownie recipe that I put on my website and so forth. And it just worked out that way.
Yeah, something like a gluten-free brownie, unless you're a gluten-free baker, makes so much sense on the website because there are so many people
looking
for that on the internet. Yeah. So it's not a clean thing. And it doesn't mean that the website's only full of holiday stuff and search engine optimized recipes. That said, I think there's this idea that project recipes, long recipes that are very involved don't do well on the internet. And I think they do. I mean, I have a lasagna bolognese where you make everything from the multi-hour bolognese to the pasta and everything. And people make it every year for Christmas. So I think it's nice to have all levels and not just simple drive-by. That's the other thing. I tend not to put anything in a book that I consider egregiously simple. I don't mean simple as in, I don't do compound butters. I'm not going to do just like if I do a pickled onion, it's part of another recipe because it's the same thing. I want every page to be a banger.
Yeah. Well, also people are paying. Like to me, I'm always like, people are paying for this and it needs to be much more.
If there's a salad dressing, it goes, I'll tell you what salad it goes in. I'm not going to be like, and here's a jar of salad dressing, if that makes sense.
Well, I found that I was getting creamed by Google because when we both started our blog, it was just, we were writing recipes, you know, chili, you know, roast chicken, whatever, chocolate pudding. And then all these people jumped in and figured out, oh, we can make money at this. So they started structuring their websites to be like, hello, this family-friendly chocolate pudding with chocolate, these keywords, and Google wanted all this stuff. And you and I resisted.
To our own, yeah.
Yeah.
But I have to say, like, is the internet better because of this? When you search for chocolate cake, are you finding the best chocolate cake on top? Well, or are you finding a search engine optimized from sites you may not have heard of that have one review on them because they've been struck?
Well, the whole idea of Google was to bring the best result to the top.
But are they doing
that?
Are they doing it? Is Google doing what Google is supposed to be doing?
Well, they just changed it. A lot of people were sort of probably going over some people's heads, but just really quickly, Google had demanded, I don't even remember when this was, but that every blog have to put ingredients in a certain formula, use certain words, write cooking times, have reviews, videos, and so forth. And they didn't want stories. So you started seeing blogs that would say like this family friendly this, and you can use, you know, this recipe has sugar. Sugar makes things sweeter. Flour. Flour makes things flourier. Butter makes things
mind numbing.
Mind numbing. But recently, it was in September, Google decided it's called helpful content. And they're saying now all that other stuff that everybody's been spending like a decade building, these food websites, they're no longer relevant. They want real content by helpful, high quality, and experience based, which is great.
Maybe that'll be good for us. Yeah. I honestly never search engine optimized the site and you can absolutely see it. I always felt like SEO people were like snake oil salesmen and I didn't really like it. But at the same time, I have like kind of accepted that a certain amount needs to be done or you just can't show up. It's sort of crazy to know that you probably have like the most popular X, Y, or Z recipe on the internet, but like it may not be on the first page. But again, is that our failing or is that Google's? Is Google doing what Google is supposed to be doing? Should we be using other search engines that maybe are a little better at putting the results you want on the top? If you can put your search results at the top, not because it's the best, but because you've structured it in some way, who's got the bad product? So I think about these things a lot, but I haven't done any of the things that I'm supposed to be doing to make my site more optimized. So,
well, there's been this whole sort of backlash about get to the recipe thing. And I'm always like, no, actually, you want someone, like when you do a recipe on your blog, you write, you know, and everyone should visit. If you don't know, if you don't follow Deb, she's a really great blogger, Smitten Kitchen. And it's one of the few blogs that I read because you're still going and it's still interesting. But I like when people say, You know, I love chocolate. I like dark chocolate. And I made this cake and I decided to try using milk chocolate. It didn't quite work. And then I tried adding a cup of sugar rather than 2 cups. And it's like, yeah, that person made the recipe.
Well, I mean, I'm pro head notes when people are like, get to the recipe. I think what they're talking about is that sort of filler content that Google was rising to the top. So people started adding a lot of filler. I don't think it was ever really, or, you know, the classic, like, they don't want to hear a story about your grandmother. But you know what? The internet's free and you don't have to go to any site you don't like. I also do have a jump to recipe button and I'm probably one of the first people to put it up there. But at the same time, I love the story. Because if you don't have a story, if you can't explain it, all it is just another recipe on the internet. We don't know anything about it. So if you can't explain why you chose milk chocolate, why granulated sugar, why this kind of olive oil, then you don't really have anything to go on when you're choosing the recipe and you may not be happy with it.
Well, a story about, like, you just mentioned grandmother. It's true. There was this whole thing about, like, nobody cares about your mother or what your mother made or anything, like, or your children or whatever. But I remember when I wrote about Nancy Silverton's brand muffins, which are incredible. Nancy used to give me bags of the muffins to bring to my grandmother because my grandmother lived in LA and knew Nancy. And that was like why I wanted to share the recipe. And I didn't linger. I didn't say my grandmother would sit there for hours and ponder the muffins. You know, she just,
I mean, I always felt like it was a little like, shut up and cook.
Yeah. Well,
and it felt like really to me, like, again, you don't have to read any, there is this is not required reading on the internet. You don't like it, go to another website. I like the stories, and I don't care whether somebody's telling, you know, stories about their grandmother. That's it. Jump to recipe buttons are great because you might have already read the story and just want to get back to the recipe.
Yeah.
But I always felt like, how come we're so tolerant when, like, certain types of chefs tell stories about their cocaine and partying days? Oh. But when a woman, perhaps, talks about something her grandmother made, we're like, so, and is it really that hard to unpack what's going on?
No, but I think the editor once told me this, my first editor, Susan Friedland, and she said, don't waste people's time. And that's true. I think when you have unnecessary steps in recipes, you know, when you write a recipe, you tell people how to make it. You say, put the oil in the pan, swirl the pan. You don't say, grab the pan with your right hand, swirl it left and right a few times, making sure the oil covers, you know, you can say, you know, if it's not necessary, unless it's...
But you should always be tightening. I mean, I'll write a head note and then I'm carving. I reread it 1,000 times. I don't ever catch all the typos, but I'm always making it tighter, neater, more succinct. I think that's just... Brevity is still a good thing, but a well-structured sentence that says more is so much better than three that say less. That's just good writing.
So when we started blogging, I started a few years before you, but we were sort of in that pioneering phase. Traditional media kind of changed. They were looking at us because they were selling magazines and newspapers, and we were basically giving things away, and it was an uneasy time, I think, and some journalists wrote not complimentary articles about food bloggers or whatever, bloggers in general. Yeah. And now it's kind of going back because a lot of the food magazines didn't survive, and it's not because of Deb or Dave. You know, I'm not responsible. I'm sorry. I didn't bring fine cooking down.
No.
But they couldn't, you know, advertising dollars dropped or anything. But they're now coming back. Like Savoir magazine.
I'm so excited. Savoir. Everybody needs to know that Savoir is coming back to print because I feel like this is something highly interesting to our audiences.
Yeah.
Perhaps buying holiday gifts should go pre-order one of those issues.
But what was interesting was one of the editors bought Savoir magazine from the company. And when I posted about it on Facebook, people were saying, what's $25 an issue? And I haven't seen the magazine at all. But they said they're only going to do 2 issues a year. And they go, we promise it'll be worth your... I was like, well, you know, people, I think, forget that things cost. Like, you have ads on your blog, and that pays for your time because you probably spend 40, 60 hours a week either working on it or thinking about it, and you have tech people and so forth. So what traditional media do you follow today? What do you think is interesting? What interests you?
I think so much is interesting. I feel like I read a lot. Since you know a lot of, like...
Do you read cookbooks?
I love cookbooks.
Okay.
I just did a big purge, but I feel like just like editing, it was a tightening where I can mm-hmm. kind of focus now more yeah. on the ones that I love. I'm sorry, David, you're sitting. I'm just kidding.
No, it's okay.
I have every one of David's cookbooks and there's room for everyone else.
I felt bad like when I've done purges, but I'm like, you know what? Other people now can enjoy this book.
Absolutely. And I get a tighter collection, which is more like easier. Again, I have a finite amount of space, mm-hmm. so if there are things that have
yours made my purge.
Oh my God, I'm so flattered.
I know, I have three Smitten Kitchen books.
It was funny because I was looking at my shelves. I'm like, I can't get rid of the baked cookbooks. I love their cookbooks so much. I know they're both onto other things. But I'm actually, Renato has a new cookbook.
Oh, because
it's going to be so good. Renato. It's going to be so good.
Yeah, I had him on a while ago. He has a new book coming out called Dolce. Dolce?
Yeah.
Is that how you put it?
I think so. Okay. Well, you know Italian better than me.
I don't speak Italian.
Okay, but you're like closer to Italy.
Dolce. 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 It's dolce in Spanish.
It's a fantastic book. I got to preview it. It's going to be a treat. Go pre-order it. I feel like I will just ingest. I will watch anything. I will read anything. I also really like, and I think about this a lot because I remember people were like, what are those food blogs doing except for taking away our jobs?
Yeah.
And then, but the thing is like, this is a tale as old of time. Like somebody new comes along doing something a little bit differently and people who've been doing it one way bristle at it. So as now that I'm not the youngest person in the field, I'm like, am I going to be a bristler or am I going to be a person that be like, you know, I may not know what this is now, but I see something great happening. I feel like that when I look at things like TikTok, I'm like, oh, this is like, I didn't start.
TikTok.
I am on TikTok and I love TikTok, but I'm also like, there's so much good stuff happening here. I love seeing all these people cooking from home in a kind of unfancy like way. And so again, it would be very easy to be like, oh, I don't know what this is. This is different. This is probably bad for all of us. But the truth is just sit back and watch what's happening and try to capture the energy because I think it's really cool.
People ask me if I'm on TikTok and I say no.
You'd be great on TikTok.
Well, I think it requires a lot of creativity to create.
I'm not that creative.
Well, you are, but I don't want to be like the grouchy old guy that says, you know, young people now doing TikTok.
I want you to be the grouchy old guy on TikTok. You would get a million followers instantly for being a grouchy old guy on TikTok.
But thanks to you and TikTok. And Deb has a newsletter that comes out every Monday. So you can go to her website, smittenkitchen.com, and subscribe to it. And it comes out every Monday. And you get this wonderful short little story about life or what's going on. A couple of links and a whole bunch of really interesting recipe descriptions. I don't know how you describe recipes so well, but if you ever teach a class, I'm signing up. But you once linked to this guy who repairs KitchenAid mixers because mine was leaking oil. And I went on TikTok. I'm not senile yet. I'm still. And he's like, just take this screw off. Take this off. And I did the whole thing. It took like 3 minutes. And I cleaned up my KitchenAid, all the oil that was dripping down. I used to post pictures on my blog thinking maybe they would come to my rescue. And like say, we want to send you a new mixer. But they never did.
Rude.
Well,
don't they know who you are?
Well, in America, they would. It was just France.
Oh, okay.
They're like, oh, yeah. Ça va, so va, little oil, les Americans. Wait. So, anyway, so I saw that, and that was great. But you always have really good links. And
thank you.
And I think TikTok is good for that kind of stuff.
There's so much, like, there's so much good and random, but there's also a grandma. Like, I saw somebody making, like, a phyllo dough, like the size of a bedroom
which
the other
day.
It was like so cool. I feel like it's so much more global and it's so much more interesting. And yes, of course, there's shopping content. You can just scroll past it. But, you know, there's definitely like sponsor content. But I feel like overall, there's just so much fresh there. And you got to go where people are joining, to be honest, to get the fresh energy. If you're feeling like whatever social media and you're like seeing the same stuff and you're kind of bored, go someplace where the numbers are growing really fast. But I do like, I'm glad you enjoyed links because it basically validates my scrolling and
procrastinating. No, but I mean, that was like the most, it was like super useful. You saved my life.
I want them to be a little random, but definitely food or cooking related.
What was interesting about social media, you know, and blogging was that it broke down these barriers. It used to be in the old days, if you wanted to publish a book or a magazine or a recipe, you had to go through an editor or an agent. And now, you know, people like you and I just are like, we're just going to do it directly. And we still like working with editors and so forth and doing books. But social media, like I was thinking about Instagram, I follow accounts that have like commercials from the 80s. I'm like addicted to those. And people who make flatbreads and breads like in Arabic countries and China. And you see these people making like phyllo and stuff, and it's like, this is great.
It's amazing. I love when you get like that little like picture of the world. And so if you don't like what you're seeing, like go unfollow some people and then go find some people that would inspire you, because there's so much out there. You asked me about starting Spin Kitchen. I kind of forgot the very key thing, which is that I actually couldn't get a job in food media. I didn't have any experience. I get it. I didn't have any experience. So I couldn't, I think I applied for a job at like, you know, Bon Appetit. And I, you know, like, right. Of course, nobody's going to, I also didn't have any media connections, which can help you if you don't have experience.
Had media connections and nobody wanted.
I had no connections and no experience. So what was I going to do? I was like, well, if I think there's anything here, I might as well just start writing about what I'm making for dinner and what I liked about it. And I, nothing, honestly, it still remains like the shock of my life that anybody wanted to read it. And over the years, I have become a good cook, but I didn't start out as one. I just only knew what I liked and what I didn't like.
Well, I remember when I started, when I moved to Paris, I thought, I'm going to write for food magazines about Paris because everyone's looking for Paris content. Mm-hmm. And people were like, well, can you write about La Durée? And I was like, well, everybody already knows that. There were all these new places opening, these little chocolate shops, these independent people. And I was meeting them. And in one magazine, I remember I proposed like a What's New in Paris article. Mm-hmm. And I didn't hear back from them. They said, send us your list. And then after 6 months, they said, well, we decided to assign that to our Paris editor or Paris.
Oh, my God.
I was like, excuse me?
Yeah.
So I started just posting the stories.
I was going to say, that's why you need social media, so you can call them out and show them the email.
You don't want to call people out. Just, you know.
I know I don't do it, but you could have. You could have.
Feel like it. Well, anyway. Changing.
It happens all of the time. Like, you're talking to a company about a product you think would be really cool. And they're like, hey, that's great. We don't think we can do it. And then whoop, they come out with a product themselves. It's so crazy. That's never happened to me. I'm definitely not speaking from experience.
Well, people say I had trouble with like appliances, like my stove. And everyone's like, you should, you know, mention them. And I was like, you know, what will I gain? Like, it's France. They're not going to respond anyways. Yeah. So.
It's always a little like calling out brands, especially as your account is large. It never feels great. It never feels great. I will say in moments of desperation, I've DM'd companies and been like,
I've tried.
Can you just help me with this thing and just like tell me the cost of the repair? I can't get anyone to pick up the phone, but I haven't. No, I would never. It just feels, it's also not what anyone's following you for, to hear what your petty grievance is. You know, corporate grievances. They love to hear your day-to-day grievances, actually. Mm-hmm. We love your curmudgeonly spirit.
Well, it's funny to look at, like, and this is a whole different subject, and I'll get back to food, but these websites for frequent flyers, and they analyze, like, the business class experience. They're like, well, they didn't, like, change the silverware, and, you know, the armrest was a little low on the left side. And, you know, they're all, when you're paying, whatever, $7,000 for a seat, the armrest should be the same.
But yeah, they should be, but I'm not the one paying $7,000, so it will never be my issue.
But it's funny to see then the comments. People are like, "Yeah, I took that flight, and like my footrest was like a little like too high for me, and I'm 5 foot." I'm like, "Wow."
I was in cattle class, and I suffered with the rest of people. But I'm like, I don't know. I feel like. I might just be mad I can't afford it, but I also just feel like it should be a little more embarrassing to be sitting in a $6,000 seat.
Well, a friend of mine
like
has a lot of miles.
Showing it off like that.
A friend of mine has a lot of miles, and he upgraded me and Roman to business class, and we were in the little pods, whatever.
Did you look at all the people walking by? Go.
No, I was just drinking champagne. Roman, you know, he's not a big person, and he kept complaining about the size of the bed, and I finally had to say, you know, the farther you are from the back of the plane, the least you can, you know, you're not allowed to complain about the size of the bed.
It's so funny because more complaining probably comes to the front of the complaint. Than the back.
But the flight attendants, I read an article, they call the business class the ICU, the intensive care unit, because those are the people that are the most demanding.
Of course, they just spend $6,000 in a seat.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've flown first class usually if somebody else was paying. Yeah. It was lovely and it was great. But I also, it made me more angry because I was like, oh, in first class, it totally doesn't matter whether your bag is below the seat in front of you. Yeah. Apparently, that was not a thing. Or like, you know, those things where they're like, if your seatbelt isn't over your blanket, we might wake you up. Oh, it's crazy. But did you know that this is not a worry in first class? It turns out they just maybe don't like poor people. Like, I don't understand.
Well, there was an article in the New Yorker once about how they make business class seats because they have to design aircraft seats for safety reasons, first and foremost. So it was really complicated. And all these things present challenges, how they're going to make them. And you're looking at me like, I don't care about the people in the $7,000 seats.
I do. Listen, of course, I'm just jealous. You're allowed to call me jealous. Well, I don't know if I had it, I would still spend it on that. But I think everybody should do whatever makes them happy with their money. And that is why I want a pony.
Okay, well, after COVID, I was getting business class seats for like the price of economy seats was like $1,100. I'm going business. And everyone's like, snob. I'm like, okay, well, the economy seats are like $60 cheaper.
Yeah, no, I definitely have friends who are like, if it's less than double or something like that, it definitely makes sense. Again.
And I spend my money on cookware. Like, I buy good cookware.
I buy good cookware. I don't buy the most expensive furniture money can buy, but I tend to, like, want to buy things that will last a long time. I have different things. We all have our things, and that's okay.
Yeah, I just read about
fast
furniture.
I'm sorry if
furniture.
I judge yours harshly. I'm just mad that I have to walk past you guys, and you look so comfortable, and I'm like...
Well, when I used to do yoga, and on the cover of all these yoga magazines, they have people doing amazing poses and putting their legs behind their head. And our teacher said to us once, he said, just to let you know, these people aren't any happier than you are in daily life.
That's such a beautiful thought.
Yeah.
It's really good to know. Yeah, you always think like, oh my God, if I had this, everything would be perfect. But at best, you would get a temporary blip of joy. I mean, you can say that, but like if you told me my rent was paid for the next 5 years, I'm like, it might be more than a temporary blip.
But it's like fitness models don't make a lot of money. So no, these guys who have amazing abs, it's great, but they can't have French fries, they can't eat chocolate, and they don't get paid that much.
Yeah.
But they look great.
They look good.
So is it worth it?
I don't know. I'll probably never find out because I chose French fries and no abs.
I know. I decided.
And working for the rest of my life.
So I decided, I've never done this before, but I decided to ask people on my social media streams questions for you.
Did you get the question I snuck in there about like how my hair looks so good every day?
Somebody did want to talk about your hair, but I said, I'm not asking her that. No, I'm just kidding. But somebody did ask about making quince jelly without a lot of sugar.
Do you know what I would do if somebody asked me about quince? I'd send them to you.
Oh, okay.
I feel like you've done far more quince recipes than I have. The thing is, I love quince. I think it smells so good. I think it tastes so good. I haven't had a lot of luck cooking with it. People tell me about candying quince and then it falls apart for me into like fluffs of applesauce. I feel like I'm not doing it right, even when I get a good and in season from the market. So I always say that David has a mastery of quince that I don't.
It doesn't seem to fit your narrative.
I tend to focus more highly on ingredients that you can easily find in a grocery store because I just want it to work for like cauliflower, onions, potatoes, like carrots. Yeah. I have one ramp recipe on my site because I just feel like it's very specific and not everyone has it.
What's the strangest recipe I ever put on my website was plum kernel oil ice cream.
That's awesome.
Nobody made it, I'm sure. But what's like the strangest recipe that you just put on your site? You figured like no one's gonna make this. Did you ever do that?
I feel like there's definitely a few. No. I've definitely done that over the years, and I actually did a pea salad earlier this year. I'd been kind of gone busy traveling a lot, and then I came back and I did it with like 8 different types of in-season peas, so it was like a little fussy. And then I made a vinaigrette with soaked raisins, so I recently was like, I think I knew nobody was gonna make it, but it's really good and you should make it. I stand behind that recipe, but I definitely do that sometimes where I'm like, I don't care, I want this recipe, because I think there's this idea that if you do everything for clicks, your entire site is going to be chocolate, peanut butter, and cinnamon buns. And that's not, you think it's what people want, but it's not really what they want. Your salad recipes may not cause the same stampede of followers, but I think they're really essential. And so I think it's really important to have a mix. So yes, it would be tempting to only do like chocolate fudge and caramel sauce, but I think in the end, you need a little like rolling balance where there's breakfast, lunch, dinner, and cake.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it's also a long-term strategy. If you're looking for clicks or people just stopping by. And the biggest thing about the internet like runs on trust.
Mm-hmm.
Like you trust certain people, you trust certain websites, and that's changed over the last few years, but you know, people trust your recipes. Like I made the gnocchi in your third book, Smitten Kitchen Keepers, and I had like 20 things I wanted to bookmark, and they came out. I was like, this will lead into one of the questions that somebody asked.
I'm so glad you liked that one because I'd made so many gnocchi recipes over the years, ricotta gnocchis, and they're all so fussy. And, you know, I'm like, maybe I can skip this step. I wonder if I don't need to boil it.
I knew it would work because you wrote about it. I was like, if she wrote it,
In the head note, you can read me saying, like, I always found them fussy. I wondered if I could do away with the boiling, with this, with that. The blotting on paper towels.
Yeah.
Yes.
But
so read the head notes.
It was really good. The only thing is it said it serves four and we ended up eating like the whole thing.
Okay, so I don't know if it's just a dairy thing, but I feel like I do say that, by the way, in the head note, that it seems like it shouldn't be for, it seems like it should be for two, but we find it very filling.
Okay, so somebody was asking what recipe you can't master, you haven't mastered.
Well, I just talked about quince. There are so many. There's also ones where it was good, but I wasn't happy with it. And that's really where there's, like, I was like, I'm in the middle of 300 recipes probably. But it's like, for example, I just made this pasta bake a few times over the last month and it was really good. And then I finally got it right. And I'm like, I think I don't like it. Like, it's just, it's not that great.
Mm-hmm.
I always talk about like cranking up ye old blog apparatus. Like, if I'm going to do it, I need to be like this, drop everything. It just doesn't seem worth it at this point to crank it up for something that I don't love. So a lot of times I'm looking for like that thing that pushes me over the, including ricotta gnocchi. It took me years to kind of like be like, this is the one. Now I'm ready to publish. So sometimes it's just ready and it's good and it sits there in a document and I make a note up top, like something's missing. Maybe it's acidity or crunch or texture or something, or a feeling that these steps are worthwhile to get to what you end up with. And then maybe one, I know it sounds weird, but like I really will be like on an airplane, on a train, in a car, and I'll be like, oh, I think I know what that gnocchi needs. And then I will pull up that document and I will make a note in it. Is that crazy?
No, it's not. I can't make granola bars. And the only time I ever made really good granola bars, I had some peanut butter frosting and I thought, well, I'm just going to add like oats and nuts and dried fruit and I'll bake it. And they were really good.
Did you put any egg or binder?
I don't remember. At the time, I was like, how did I do this? And I tried like four times to get it right.
I remember you talking about your granola bar.
Yeah.
I've done a couple over the years. They tend to just need some, they really do need some sugar and oil to bind them. Or an egg. There's a lot of things. And the truth is that I just don't make them that much anymore because they're sugary and they're calorie-laden and it's fine. But I
always feel good eating them. It's like granola bars.
I think they're a great snack, but I feel like it's a lot of work and a lot of ingredients. And maybe I would rather have a cookie and then just eat an apple with it.
Yeah. Well, I'm in New York right now. That's why we can do this interview. Mm-hmm. And I've been eating York peppermint patties. I'm always like, if I want something sweet. They don't seem like they're bad for you because they're like minty.
I love them too.
They're really good.
Have you ever made them?
I have. There's a recipe in my book, the ice cream book.
Okay, is it the thing with the powdered sugar and the butter, and then you make them? I see. And they have to stay frozen though, right, to work?
Or no,
do they go in the
mine
fridge?
Mine doesn't have butter, but I realized like you don't need to make patty if you're making. They're fold in for ice cream. I was like, just make a slab, put the slab on the baking sheet, you know, and then crumble it up.
I think the best thing for readers is a slightly lazy and fed up person writing the recipes because the thing is, if you are like, this is too much work, I don't want to cut these up.
Yeah.
Imagine how somebody else is going to feel. So when I talk about this pasta bake, I'm like, I just didn't feel like it was worth it for the steps and the result.
Yeah.
If I don't feel like that, like if you, that's your biggest thing. And so for me, the more times I make things, the more steps disappear.
Well, I've seen like I was watching on Instagram and somebody was making some cookies, but then they used the fast motion for forming the cookies. I was like, to back up it.
Yeah.
Because that's a tough cookie to form and it's a lot of work.
Well, somebody's going to find out when they make it.
Well, you once said that you didn't like being photographed, and now you do videos, and they're really good from your kitchen.
You've changed since
I met you.
I don't think I've really had a choice. I would say I'm more reluctant on screen. Do I seem shy?
You seem
cautious.
Timid. Introverted, you're an extroverted introvert.
I'm so glad we finally diagnosed me because I never know how to answer that question. I think I just, I want it to be about my food.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind being on screen if that's what gets us there. But even when I've done YouTube, I'm like, can we mostly focus on the food? Because I don't think you should have to like me. I want you to like the recipes, mm-hmm. you know, or I want you to understand. So I want like the recipes and the food to be the main thing. And I could be like a secondary thing. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of on-screen personalities, it's kind of the other way around. And that's probably a more winning formula for it to be personality first and food second. But I just don't think you should have to like me or want to see my face to want to make the recipes.
Well, I think that people want to see you. I mean, you've chosen the recipe and there's you don't want to waste people's time. And you want to say, this is how you make this really good broccoli slaw. And I love the broccoli slaw recipe on your site, by the way. Roman had never had broccoli slaw. He didn't know. As a French person, he was like, you can eat raw broccoli?
Ah, I'm like, well, yeah. Well, tell Roman I love his carrot salad and okay. I make it all the time.
Okay. I want to see you do the recipe because you're enthusiastic about it and you're making it in your kitchen. And your kitchen's tiny. It's funny. I was reading a little bit about you before this interview. They were like, there was not the room for the crew in the kitchen. There wasn't room for four people.
Yeah.
And that was kind of funny.
That's why I work with two. Well, okay. Maybe I just resent that I have to like you can just go on screen and I have to like put on cover up and mascara. I know okay. Maybe you can say I don't have to, but like I do.
Okay.
Maybe I resent that I have to like brush my hair.
Okay.
When I'm cooking at home, I'm wearing like sweats and my hair yeah. is a messy top knot. And I'm like, I don't know. It's just a different mode to be on screen. I don't mm-hmm. know if this is as true for men. I just don't think it is. But for women, it's hair and makeup. I'm not saying it's like that for everyone. And I'm not saying you have to do those things. But in general, like it's just more. But also, I don't know. You're probably right, and I should probably do more YouTube. I need to find a new – I'm putting this out there. I really need to find a new video team.
Oh,
and that's okay. really what's holding it up in my lack of time to find one. So
well,
I want to find –
people don't realize you need a team. People have said to me you should do videos. I'm like, well –
nothing bad happened with the old team. We did not have a falling out. Okay. There's no drama there. They were great. I just need – I want people like who are like right in New York City who can just kind of come by and mm-hmm. work in my kitchen and – I need to find somebody new and I need to put time into finding somebody new. So I'm just going to put it out there in your podcast and then hopefully somebody will emerge in my DMs.
If anybody has any video, people
who likes to work in small kitchens and wants to help me bring my YouTube videos back, I will. So as I said, I'm more of a reluctant on screen, mm-hmm. but I'm obviously not offline. So here we are.
Well, writers like to hide behind the words, but you're...
That's what I said. Yeah. Why can't the food be good enough that I don't have to be on it?
So the last question I'm going to ask you... This was a very interesting question. I remember you made like a wedding cake once on your website. It took mm-hmm. like a week. I was like, I'm not going to make that, but I'm following just for the story. What is your favorite go-to recipe when you have, and I know you've never had this happen before, when you have all day to cook?
Oh, no, that's absolutely true.
You've had all day to cook?
No. Okay, so during the week, I'm working. I'm in like... you know, a little more of a hustle, got to get things done, have a to-do list mindset. But on the weekend, I actually tend not to cook on the weekend that much. But the exception is, let's say it's like a really rainy, coldy, like snowy, gross, horrible day where nobody wants to go outside. That's when I do an all-day cooking project.
Okay.
And that's when I'll make, I don't know, I'll make like, I just made, I didn't actually have time for short rib onion soup or, you know, the bolognese sauce that you cook all afternoon or my lasagna bolognese or I'll mm-hmm. do something more.
Lasagna takes a long time.
It takes, especially if you want to make, and if you make the sheets yourself, it's not like pasta's that hard to make,
but it's another thing.
You get those crispy little pieces. It's so good. Or if you have a good place that will sell you sheeted pasta, you can mm-hmm. thin it out at home if you have a pasta wheel, and you should get one.
A pasta wheel?
Well, I'm going to think
a roller.
Yeah, a roller.
Oh, I have one. I have the attachment for my KitchenAid mixer.
I have that too, but I really prefer my hand-cranked Atlas one that I got like 20 years ago because it really lasts and lasts. It's in perfect condition. And I don't have to take out the KitchenAid to use it for me. But I know most people do the KitchenAid thing.
The KitchenAid, I said.
It works great. And they have an extruder now. I saw an ad for
But extruders don't work. But Heidi Swanson of 101 Cookbook, she has this little cavatappi maker.
Nice.
And it's like something you clamp on the counter and like it only makes, is it cavatappi?
Okay. Yeah, I think so. I want that.
I know.
I would love something small. Yeah.
I was like, I looked it up and it was like $35. I was like, oh my God, I want cavatappi's good.
What else would I make if I had all day? I mean, I love going for it. Like, I love making, like, a tiramisu and making my own ladyfingers, too. Like, I love making. So I actually really do, because the truth is I don't know if that works for a work day unless I'm specifically working on a recipe. Mm-hmm. I also tend to use it for like ideas I've had that I don't think are like strong enough to put a work day towards, but I kind of want to kick around with the idea. Like, we're having a lot of people over tomorrow, so I probably won't have time, but I have like a little cookie idea I haven't worked out yet. So I might try that if I get done with everything else soon. So I do like having time to go deeper into kind of insane projects.
Okay.
It just doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, I just, for me, every day is like, I've never had a day. When I started writing cookbooks, I would spend the day like writing and testing recipes. But now there's all this other stuff going on, and we have social media. And
I know. So. Well, I know it can be a distraction. And also, it's a lot. It's very time consuming. But like, have you ever made, I'm sure you have, apple strudel where you make the phyllo and then you do the apples and the breadcrumbs? It's so good and it's so special.
I haven't made that.
It's really good. Yeah. I have a really good recipe on my site. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Smitten Kitchen.
Yeah, that's right.
I adapted it from Louisa Weiss's, I want to say it was her classic German baking book. I want to say that's the one it's from. But it really gave me the jumping off point. Then I made my mom come over and help me because I was like very intimidated.
You have to use a table, a round table.
But it is dough is flour, water, and oil. Like, it's a joke. It's so simple. Yeah. And after that, it's just chopped apples. It's so good.
Okay.
So that's a great like fall season. Mm. It's gross out. I want to stay home. It doesn't, by the way, take all day, but it might like mentally make you feel like it's really wonderful to make.
Well, there was people who had a bakery in San Francisco called Scheherazade, and they made their own phyllo dough. It was an older couple, and they would shake it. You know, it was like a big sheet. And I remember buying it and taking it home, and it was really easy. It did not get dry out as soon as you open the box.
Yeah.
But it tasted like dough. It was delicious.
So good.
And then I used to buy phyllo dough there, and I was like, what are you going to do when you retire? They're like, our kids don't care. I was like, I'll take it over.
Now I want to make little spanakopita, like triangles, but you make my own phyllo because it's really so easy. Mm. But again, would I do it on a Tuesday? No, but like maybe on a weekend? Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Okay. Well, it was great to have you on. We're here in New York, and it's great to be here with you, that you hear all the background noise and so forth. But Deb is at smittenkitchen.com, and you're the author of 3 books, The Smitten Kitchen Cookbook, and next time you're on, you'll have to tell me how you came up with that name. The other one is Smitten Kitchen Every Day, which are more everyday favorites. And then the recent one is Smitten Kitchen Keepers. And I've heard a rumor that there might be another book in your future. I always thought you should do an entertaining book.
That's so funny that you say that.
Or a book of granola bar recipes.
Oh my God, absolutely not. You'd be the only buyer, David. I am not working on another book right now, but I have been thinking it might go in that direction. It's either going to be that or digging more into Keeper's classics. We'll see. But it's something. I tend to publish books 5 years apart, which means that my book is 1 year old and I don't have to think about it yet.
Yeah. Well, when you go on book tour, when you're booking, everyone's like, what's your next book? And you're like, I just finished.
It's like asking somebody with a newborn when they're going to have another baby. Yeah. That's how I feel. Except for my newborn is 13 months old. So I guess I have to think about it, but I'm not. I really like to give myself time to
process,
refill the well.
Well, it's funny because some authors, they come out with books. They go, oh, now I have to promote it. I'm like, that's the fun part. You get to talk about it. I love that.
You leave your apartment.
Yeah.
See, like, that's why I'm like, am I really an introvert if I like leaving my apartment and seeing people?
Well, it's control. Yeah, I like that too. I like meeting people. Okay, well, thank you so much for being on. And also subscribe to Deb's newsletter. That's at smittenkitchen.com. And I'm going to put all the links on my newsletter page. I'm going to do a whole page with all the information, links to Deb's books and so forth. I hope you enjoyed listening. If you want to follow me, my newsletter is davidleibovitz@substack.com. And you can get recipes and Paris stories and more in your inbox. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.